I just want to start by asking you to lay out for me what prompted you to want to include this in the authorization bill for DHS this year.
You know, as you know, we're obsessed around here. We have been with cutting spending in this government wherever we can, and our focus obviously has been on the bigger stuff, and we're often looking at program levels, eliminating programs, and we've got to do something about entitlements, and all of this is good and important. But as one of 87 freshmen, Republican freshmen, I'm not alone in that a number of us have sort of looked at, there are so many places to cut and save money when you really sort of go down below the surface. And when my staff, I reviewed a number of different things with my staff, and when we saw that some of the numbers when it comes to software spending, what the federal government, like private industry, spends on software, it's just amazing the savings that can be reaped when you try to cut or make things more efficient. The federal government spends about $40 billion a year on software purchases. And typically through overpurchasing and underpurchasing, they waste about 30% of that number. So there are just some simple, you know, little things like this that can become big things in actual savings.
So this is, you see this as one piece of potential savings for agencies across the board. Is it fair to say that you're looking at DHS to be a leader in this effort, but certainly not the last agency that you would think should undertake an effort like this?
No, our hope is that by doing this with DHS, we can present sort of a model to the government program-wide, program by program. Because the savings here, it's really so basic. And the private sector's doing this. They're starting to look at what's called software asset management, where they really get a handle on their software needs, and they make more efficient and timely purchases. For the federal government to be able to do that can benefit to the tune, again, of billions of dollars worth of savings. So I think the hope is that by doing this with DHS, we can sort of spur this, at least this little aspect on in each of the government programs.
I thought the choice of DHS for this was an interesting coincidence because Richard Spires, of course, is one of the leaders of the administration's efforts to move to the cloud. So I wonder how this might affect federal agencies moving to the cloud, whether this will impact purchases of software as a service or whether it's more out-of-the-box type software.
That's a great question. My hunch is it would pertain to more out of the box software. But I got to be honest, that Francis, that's a wonderful thought. I think the hope here is that this is such an easy, a relatively easy, painless way to save federal spending. Without, in essence, having to cut anything. I know in talking to a number of my colleagues, Republican and Democrat, I anticipate that this, again, is going to be looked at as a reform next year as well.
Can you give us some thoughts about some other things that you might be looking at along these same lines that are not program-level cuts? Because the agency people that I talk to are, insecure is maybe not the best word, but apprehensive about what might be coming down the line, not in an ideological way, but just in a budget reality way, understanding that very few agencies, if any, are going to have as much money as they've had in the past. And so understanding places where cuts may come like this actually, I think, might give them some comfort because you're saying, it sounds to me, rather than just looking at what programs can we cut, we want to see if we can find efficiencies in doing business. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely, Francis, and that's the first step. I think, it's so unfortunate because I think Republicans have done a fairly lousy job this last year of marketing what we're doing. We all came to Washington really to do two things, to cut government. Government's gotten too big, and to help grow the economy. It seems like all we've talked about is the cutting aspect of that, and we focused on real cuts, and we focused on a small part of the government pie, non-defense discretionary spending. Step one has to be, almost even before cuts, is looking at efficiencies, looking at savings, and looking as well at eliminating, you know, the huge, you know, nebulous area of waste and fraud. Again, that goes on in every single government department. This type of spending reform here, eliminating wasteful software licenses, I think falls under the heading of spending efficiencies, but also eliminating waste and fraud. This is more waste. I think that that step, focusing on that step initially, and then looking at real actual spending cuts, and then the third final piece would be to look at real actual program eliminations.
I had Danny Werfel on the show a couple of weeks ago talking about the success that the administration is touting about improper payments and the way that they've cut them, and that plays right into what you're talking about waste, fraud, and abuse. What is your view of how the administration has done with improper payments and other waste, fraud, and abuse type cuts?
I think they've made some gentle progress in the area of improper payments. I think in general, in the whole waste, fraud, and abuse arena, they've given nothing but lip service to this. They're not alone. I mean, virtually every administration, Republican and Democrat, that's come in, and truly most of the Congresses as well, this is always such an easy, great thing to tout. I'm going to go after waste, fraud, and abuse. And the numbers are big, but at the end of the day, it's never really done. And on top of that, what's unique about this administration is, so they haven't touched waste, fraud, and abuse like prior administrations really didn't either. On top of that, they have just piled on so much additional spending that it's forced us, Republicans, to sort of be the bad guys because we really got to ratchet this thing back. And that's where, again, this whole notion of cutting down what government does, we need to present not just in a numbers perspective, but why that's better for all of us.
There's a conception, and it may be a misconception, I'd be happy for you to address it, among the folks that I talk to at the agencies, that you mentioned your freshman colleagues, that you folks want to come and just kind of cut government at just for the sake of cutting government. Has there been anything that you've learned about the federal government since you've been in Washington, your first term here, Congressman, that surprised you that maybe the government did or that did a lot better than you thought?
No, only in that I'm not a kid, and I've studied this for a while. Government does some of the basic things we want government doing, and they do some of these things very well. The problem that we're at right now, and that's why this is such a fascinating time to be in Washington, is we have for years and years and years asked so much more of government that now we're in a position where it's like we've all woken up after a 40-year slumber and we realize we're flat broke. And what Republicans have done, unfortunately, is gone after the easy stuff. You know, again, this pie of non-defense discretionary spending. And that's actually the smallest piece of the pie, and it's actually a piece of the pie where there are programs in there that we shouldn't cut. The biggest problems and the biggest drivers of our bankruptcy are the entitlement programs, and on that score, most politicians in both parties just don't have the will to do anything about this. And again, I think a lot of the freshmen knew this going in. We knew that unless we do something about Medicare and Social Security and Medicaid, it doesn't matter. How many? Again, this is great that if we eliminated wasteful software licenses in every government program, we may save $12, $15 billion. That's great. But that won't do a thing to the disastrous trajectory we're on right now. And we knew that going in, and I still know that now. And in many ways, it makes me feel bad because we do cut a few billion here and there in programs where real people need real help. But it's all of our fault because we've asked government to be so big that now we don't. It's going to take us a while to go after what really needs to be gone after.
Congressman, I just have a couple of minutes left, and I really appreciate your time this afternoon. What is it we get here in Washington? We get wound up in what's going on inside the Beltway. Tell me something about the 8th District in Illinois that we should know here in D.C.
This may sound obvious, but I'm going to say it anyways because I think the media misses this. I represent a pretty classic swing district, about an equal number of Republicans, Democrats, and Independents. And the anger and the passion is every bit as high right now as it was a year ago when I got elected. The fear that people have that government is too big and the private sector out there is suffocating is every bit as omnipresent as it was a year ago. And I think the media has tried to pivot, and they've tried to say that the anger out here in America is more directed toward Washington because Washington's dysfunctional and Republicans and Democrats can't get along. And I think the president is going to try to play off of that. I think that's misplaced. I can just tell you about my district. It's still the fear and anger that people had last year, which is not that Washington's dysfunctional, but that Washington's broke. And damn it, do something about it.
Finally, sir, who would you like to see as the next offensive coordinator of your Chicago Bears?
Well, I think they did things backward. I mean, I look at Lovie Smith. It's just odd to me that you keep your head coach, you get rid of your general manager, you get rid of your offensive coordinator, but yet you keep your head coach. If I'm coming on and I'm the new general manager of the Bears, I want to say in who my head coach is. It just seems like they did that backwards.